Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm. Singer-songwriter Carly Simon is best known for hits like You're So Vain and Anticipation. Let the River Run, written for the film Working Girl, won an Oscar, a Golden Globe, and a Grammy. Simon is also the author of 5 children's books. She joins us from a studio at NPR in New York to talk about the personal story behind the song she performs for a new children's book. It's titled Take Me Out to the Ball Game. And if you'd like to join us, call us on 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. I look forward to hearing you. Good morning, Carly. It's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Diane. It's so nice to be here.
I sure wish I could be seated across from you. You are such a lovely woman, and I've always enjoyed your music. But this is going to have to be the best we can do.
Well, it's pretty darn good. I'm very, very happy to be here
Thank
with you.
Thank you. Tell us how you became involved with this book in particular.
Well, from your wonderfully lofty introduction, the listener might think that I had written Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which the book is based on the story of, and that is, in fact, a song. The song was first, and then the song became the book, and then the book became, you know, it many things flowed from the same fount of Take Me Out to the Ball Game. But the question that you asked me was how I became involved with this book, and that would have to be, I got a call from Peter Yarrow, who is the publisher of this book, and asked me whether I would use my version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which I sang for the Ken Burns baseball series on NET, for this newly illustrated children's book version of Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and that they would put my CD of me singing Take Me Out to the Ball Game in the spine of the book. And I said I would be happy to, and here I am, delighted to promote it, because it's a fine-looking book.
And it is a fine-looking book. I was surprised to learn that Take Me Out to the Ball Game, usually sung during the seventh inning stretch, is simply the chorus.
Yes, it's become very much of the unofficial anthem of all seventh inning stretches. And very few people know that there's a story behind, that there are verses to the well-known chorus, the chorus being, take me out to the ball game, take me out with a crowd, buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks, I don't care if I ever come back. You know, that.
Right.
I'm sorry to go on a little long.
Oh, I like it.
The whole song is the story about Katie Kasem, and it's about the fact that she was such a baseball fan and fanatic that all she wanted to do was have her beau take her out for a baseball game,
right,
instead of going to a show. And she knew all the players by their first names, and she was just a rabid baseball fan, which is what I was. Growing up, I was a rabid baseball fan because of reasons that even Ken Burns, when he asked me to sing for his baseball special, didn't know,
And we're going to get to those reasons after our listeners hear your version of the song.
Katie Casey was baseball mad. She had the fever and she had it bad. Just to root for the hometown crew, every cent that Katie spent. On one Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show. But Miss Kate said no. I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I don't care if I ever get back, 'cause it's root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame, 'cause it's one, two, three strikes, you're out at the old ball game. Katie Casey saw all the games, knew all the players by their first names, told the umpire he was wrong all along, and she was strong. When the score was 2-2, Katie Casey, she had the clue to cheer on the boy. She knew just what to do. She made everyone sing the song. Take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd. Buy me some peanuts and Cracker Jacks. I do not care if I ever get back, 'cause it's root, root, root for the home team. If they don't win, it's a shame.
I'll bet there were millions of people out there singing right along with you. It's wonderful, yeah, Curly.
It's really terrific. It is a very positive spin.
Yeah.
It's a nice feel.
Absolutely. I have the book in front of me, and I love the illustrations. Tell me about the illustrator.
The illustrator I have never met. I didn't have any choice in who the illustrator would be, and it's just as well, because I probably would have said I'll do it myself. But she comes from Japan. She studied at the Rhode Island School of Design, and she lives in Brooklyn. She's done a bunch of other children's books, the illustrations for, and I hope that I get to work with her, you know, at some other time on an original project where I write the words, I write the song.
And here on the back cover is a photograph of you, age what, about 7, 8?
I think about, I'm looking at it now too, I think I was 5.
Okay.
I think I remember that haircut was in when I was about 5.
And you have a baseball bat in your hand because, tell me about Jackie Robinson and your family.
Well, I was in love with baseball, and I'm not sure whether my falling in love with baseball came first or whether my getting to know Jackie Robinson and his wife Rachel and his 3 kids and their moving in with us for a year and a half had anything to do with my loving baseball. It was the year 1955 and or no 1954, and my mother read somewhere that Stanford was still acting like an integrated, I mean like a segregated community, and unlike many of the towns around Stanford, Stanford was a strange kind of a holdout for some sort of bigotry that they didn't even own up to. And she was horrified by this, and she got in touch with Rachel Robinson somehow, and she said, meet me on the Merritt Parkway, which is a beautiful parkway between Manhattan and parts of Connecticut, and I'll take you around and we'll go look at houses or land. And she met with Rachel on the parkway, and they became, I mean, it's very, very hard to tell this story fast, but the long and the short of it is that they became very, very close friends. My parents went around to the politicians and the religious leaders of the community in Stamford, and basically integrated the community by breaking the color barrier with having the Robinsons buy the first plot of land in Stamford, Connecticut that was to be owned by an African American, and I think they were still called Negroes at that point, which sounds horrifying to us to all of our ears now, but that's just the way it was.
And how were they received?
That's just my stomach going off sounding like a bell. Or was that my cell phone sounding like a stomach?
I think so. Well, I'll tell you what. I want to get back to the story of Jackie Robinson and the influence he had on your life. But we've got to take just a short break. And during that time, maybe you can turn that cell phone off. Short break, Carly Simon. New book, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, with it includes a 3-song CD. Welcome back. Carly Simon is with me. She is in a studio, an NPR studio in New York. We're talking about a brand new book, a children's book, but with a 3-song CD attached. Of course, Carly Simon is a Grammy and Oscar Award winner. The book is called Take Me Out to the Ball Game, and Carly has lots of experience with ball games, baseball games, and especially the Brooklyn Dodgers. Jackie Robinson and his family lived with her family in Connecticut for about a year and a half. Carly, we've had an email from Larry in Pineville, North Carolina, who says, since about 1949, I have felt that Jackie Robinson might never have been the Jackie Robinson we know, except for the supportive role played by his wife, Rachel. What does Carly think about that?
There's no question that Rachel is a force. She became my mother's best friend, and she was with my mother, as my mother lay dying. There was Rachel, and she spun a very, very significant beautiful web around our family, and she was so, she so empowered Jack, and also kitted him out of being ultra serious, which he sometimes could be, or ultra defiant, which was, you know, sometimes for a good purpose and other times, you know, not. I mean, Rachel was always there just to show Jack where the ground was. Not what a ground rule double was necessarily, but she brought up her three children just beautifully. One of her children, Jack Jr., was my brother's closest friend, and then Sharon and David, and they're all just such special, you know, people. And unfortunately, they're, you know, mostly memories for me now, because it's been such a long time since I've been in touch with any of them. I think the last one I saw was David, when he returned with some beautiful sculpture from Africa that he gave to my mother. But yes, I would agree with you about Rachel. I don't think there's anyone that knows Rachel that wouldn't agree with that.
He took you to lots of the Dodgers games. You were introduced to all the players. How was that for you?
Well, it was like Katie Kasem. I knew all the players by their first names, and you know, of course, I knew what numbers they wore on their uniforms, and I could be challenged, but I do know at least the starting team of the Brooklyn Dodgers in the years 54, 55. And I was at so many of the games because my father, especially my father and I, would go down with Jackie to the home games at Ebbets Field. And the team got so used to this little 8-year-old coming in with, you know, with their star, with their big star with a 42 on his back. And they gave me a little mascot recognition of giving me my own uniform. And so I used to go in the dugouts, in the dugout for the home games, and very often sit, especially on Pee Wee Reese's lap. I remember that lap was the friendliest to a little squirming 8-year-old who was just out of breath, not being able to believe where she was.
Well, those are absolutely wonderful memories. Last night, I know you performed at the Our Time Gala. Tell us about that organization and your involvement with it.
Our Time is a very special organization started by a man named Taro Alexander for kids, for young people who have a stammering problem. Some people would call it a stutter, and others would call it a stammer. I, who am a stammerer, will call it either one, and now with a measure of pride. But anyway, Taro has taken in all of these kids who can hardly say a word, and has brought them into theatrical settings, and within those settings, they can make their own sound in their own time. And so they sing, or they say a dramatic line, if it comes out that it is a dramatic line. If I had grown up during the time period between 2000, which is when our time was first inaugurated, I would have been a very different person. I wouldn't have been so afraid of the limelight because of my stammer. I became so afraid to go to school, because there I was, you know, with the lights on me, having to read a phrase from a book, and I couldn't possibly have done it because I couldn't get the word out. So there I was being asked a question by a teacher and not being able to give an answer, not because I didn't know it, but because I couldn't say it. And so a year ago, I was asked by Taro Alexander to be awarded by that group for the work that I had done with other kids or other other grown kids who are stammerers. And I was given an award, and the group from Our Time performed a bunch of my songs, and I got up and got the award and wept and wept and wept as I told the story of being basically a kid that just couldn't speak. And this year, the award was given to David Seidler, who wrote The King's Speech, which is, I don't know if you've seen that.
I have. It's absolutely fabulous.
Fabulous and breathtaking. Mm. And David Seidler was also a stammerer. And he told the story about how it was for him growing up and then slowly growing out of his stammer. And, there are lots of different types of speech therapists certainly the Jeffrey Rush character in The King's Speech is such a wonderful example of what was available at that point when stuttering was something that was still in its baby steps of being, discovered how to deal with it. I myself was able to overcome it. I certainly haven't erased it, and it's there in my life. And if you asked me to read something, I wouldn't be able to, because there are certain days that I can't say the consonant S, for example, and other days that I can't say H or F. And I never know which day those days are going to be, which makes my life very exciting.
The feeling, Will Curley. You may know I have spasmodic dysphonia, which meant that my voice just stopped working for quite some time because of strangled vocal cords. And for years, I received botulinum toxin. But now I'm being coached by someone who coaches opera singers.
No kidding. How interesting.
Yep.
And does it have to do with the strengthening of the vocal cords?
Exactly. Strengthening of the vocal cords. And frankly, I'm doing this via Skype because my coach is out in Los Angeles. But for you, considering the fact that you were stammering, singing seemed to erase that, isn't that right?
It did, and it was an instinctive feeling that my mother had. I was sitting on her lap every day before going to school, just in tears, and just saying, I can't do this. I was just going to be mortified, and just another time, and more kids would bully me and make fun of me. And she started to say, well, tap your foot. And I started to tap my foot, and she said, now say the words along with when you tap your foot, so that if you're trying to say pass the butter, but you can't say pass, say it with a beat, pass the butter, please, pass the butter now, pass the butter, in all different kinds of ways of where I would put the pass on the beat. But I let the beat sort of creep up into the rest of my body and into my lungs, and it was a natural thing to sing when I had a beat under my speech.
Wow.
And so it sort of became pass the butter now. And so eventually I found my voice that way.
And that's
the song.
That's the title of my first book, Finding My Voice.
Yes.
So there we are. Now, I want to know the story behind your first big hit, That's the Way I've Always Heard It Should Be.
Well, that was a melody that I had written originally for NBC, who was doing a special called Who Killed Lake Erie. And they had heard that there was this composer out there somewhere. I was all of 22 at the time, and I sat down and kind of taught myself to play the piano around that melody, and I gave that melody to NBC for the use of of the underscore of Who Killed Lake Erie. And a year went by and nothing much happened to it. And then I started writing songs, sitting down at the guitar and learning some chords and playing a little bit more piano and singing songs. But once I write a melody, it's impossible for me to write lyrics to it. So my best friend, Jake Brackman, lived around the corner, and I said, will you come over and just see whether you can lend your talents with words to this melody? And his talents indeed were with words, but he was then writing for The New Yorker and for Newsweek, and he became film critic for Esquire. And so Jake was the one who wrote the lyric for That's the Way I've Always Heard It Should Be, after I had already written its melody.
Carly Simon, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show.
My father sits at night with no lights on. His cigarette glows in the dark. The living room is still. I walk by, no remark. I tiptoe past the master bedroom where my mother reads her magazines. I hear her call sweet dreams, but I forget how to dream. But you say it's time we moved in together and raised a family of our own, you and me. Well, that's the way I've always heard it should be. You want to marry me, we'll marry. My friends from college, they're all
What a powerful song. Singing right along with you, Carly. One of my very favorites. The words must have resonated with you once you heard them.
Oh, well, Jake is so capable and so able to get inside my head, which is what a really good writer of fiction can do. I mean, as Hemingway said, it's really about paring away everything else but the truth. And Jake was able to do that in this song. And I don't usually work with lyricists. I usually write my lyrics first and then write the music to my own lyrics.
I see.
But Jake is really, you know, somebody who can get inside my head.
And clearly did with this one.
Well,
Carly, how do you feel that stuttering or stammering affected your musical career, or did it?
Well, it's so hard to separate my musical career from what I was as a musician before I had a career. I think I became a musical person, a musical entity, because of my stammer. I think it was hugely cause and effect.
Carly Simon, her newest book, Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which includes a 3-song CD.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by Constant Contact, offering tools to manage, monitor, and measure social media. Learn more at constantcontact.com/social media. By Cabot Creamery Cooperative, 5 generations of New England and New York farm families working together to produce naturally aged traditional Vermont cheddar cheese. And by CSX, whose trains move a ton of freight nearly 500 miles on 1 gallon of fuel to help reduce fuel consumption. CSX, how tomorrow moves. This is NPR.
On the next Fresh Air, the start of the Civil War 150 years ago, and how national leaders and ordinary citizens responded to the chaos and uncertainty. And we'll look at how the Civil War continues to reverberate today. We'll talk with Adam Goodhart, author of the new book, 1861. He also writes for the New York Times Civil War blog, Disunion. Join us.
If you just joined us, Carly Simon is with me. She has a brand new children's book out, but I know that adults will enjoy it as well. It is Take Me Out to the Ball Game, which includes a 3-song CD with Carly Simon singing that absolutely wonderful song. We're going to open the phones in just a moment, but we've had a couple of emails, Carly, asking about the Simon sisters. Here's one from Simon, who says, please ask Carly about the Simon sisters and their recording of Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. And here's one from Jan, who says, thank you for all your songs. My children grew up listening to the children's album you produced with your sisters, the Simon sisters. Is there any chance you might reissue that album or sing again with your sisters?
Yes, well, I have 2 wonderful sisters, and the sister that's being referenced here is Lucy, and she is now in Australia because she's just written the music for Dr. Zhivago.
Oh my!
I know, she's a serious composer.
Whoa.
She's in Melbourne, I think she's in Melbourne now. And she and I used to sing together when we were both in school, and we each knew 3 chords on the guitar, and we learned some folk songs, and we got booked on hootenanny shows, and you know, somehow we were making it back to write our term papers in time for the Monday morning classes, and we were very lucky in that we got to tour the East Coast, the college, you know, the college campuses and the coffee houses of the mid '60s, and we made three albums. And our, I guess, the last one that we made together was the Simon Sisters Sing for Children, and that is going to be reissued.
Ah,
it's reissued once every decade or so, and I think it's about time for that decade to want to just push it out again. And the Simon Sisters Sing Winkin' Blinkin' and Nod was just reissued, and that's a collection of our two albums that we had made when we were doing the tours together. And that's but I think there was only a special number. It's very hard to put out a CD these days and have them sell, so you have to, you know, they're downloadable. I'm pretty sure that they are downloadable, but they're, if you go into Is there Borders anymore, or am I talking in an antiquated way?
No.
Good.
There's still
Borders. If you go into a Borders and look in the back sections under old vinyl or something, you'll probably find the Simon Sisters Sing Winkin' Blinkin' and Nod.
All right, and let's open the phones to Susan in Laurel, Maryland. Good morning. You're on the air.
Such a pleasure to speak with you. Carly, I just wanted to say thank you for living a life in the public eye so gracefully, but more particularly, your album spoke to me so much as I was growing up, and in particular, you helped me find my voice, because like you, I have a low alto and didn't really think I could sing until I listened to you, and you also helped me find jazz because of your album Torch, so now I'm a jazz singer, and I want to thank you very much for the part that you had in that.
Oh, I'm overwhelmed. I get easily overwhelmed, and that does overwhelm me, because it's just, I feel very humbled by that. Thank
you. That's great. Thank you, Susan. Let's go to another. Susan, it's time in Syracuse, New York. Good morning. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Surely.
I just wanted to share just a short story. My son, who is 15, he stutters as well, but they have a pretty term for it called disfluency. And he was diagnosed like at an early age, and he was made fun of. And then a miraculous thing happened. By like the time he was 10 or 11 years old, he grew to be almost 6 foot tall and became a great athlete. And not too many people made fun of him anymore. And what's wonderful also is that he's just also become a wonderful kid. But as I was listening to you and you saying, like, each day you don't know if F is going to come out or S is going to come out, he still struggles with that as well. But so I just, you know, it just touched me while I was listening to it, and I just felt like I needed to call in and say something.
I'm glad you did.
Oh, that's so nice for you to say, and may I also add that when I was about 15, I went to my boyfriend's house for dinner, and I had thought I had kept this secret from him, you know, as if he didn't notice it. And his mother said something to him after dinner and said, "Does Carly have a speech impediment?" And so my boyfriend Nick took me for a drive in his beautiful, I remember it was an Impala convertible.
Yeah.
He took me for a drive around the lake and said, "My mother asks if you have a speech impediment." And I said, "Well, yes, I do. I do." And then I started crying. Oh. And then he said, "But I find it so charming."
Oh, that's a good friend.
It was the affirmation of something that is not about perfection, but about something that is potentially much more interesting than perfection.
And so supportive. I have to ask you the question every interviewer has to ask: who is you're so vain about?
And I just must say I'm very reluctant to say anything, but if you can understand code, I'll say it to you now.
Carly, that song, it just sets everything going, doesn't it?
It does, and that version of it, which I haven't heard for a long time because that's a live one, I
right.
was thinking, I love that guitar solo.
Yeah, it's terrific. It's terrific. You
it's
know,
got a lot of energy.
I want to ask you about your children, Sally and Ben, who I gather are both in the music business as well.
Oh, yes, they are, and they're both such fine, fine people and fine musicians. Ben is with me in New York, and he actually sang with me last night at the Our Time special, which was
wow.
We sang a song that we wrote to each other called I Can't Thank You Enough. And Ben has just been out on tour with his dad, James Taylor. And it's the first time that he's ever really gotten to sing with James in an important way, kind of, you know, on tour. And it gave Ben such a great feeling of you know, like a tip of the hat to the right stuff, because he just came back changed, happier, more fulsome. Just having a good relationship with your dad can do an awful lot for
you. I should say. And you now have a grandchild.
I do. Sally, my precious Sally, my girl, has a beautiful baby boy named Bodie. And she and her husband, Dean, live up in Cambridge. And both work there. Sally works at the Berklee School of Music. She teaches and she sings. She's so busy with as young parents are with an even younger child. In fact, sometimes I think Bodie is older than Sally already, because she just plows and races around the house, just really trying to make it all work. But I just love seeing it all happen, because it's just like you just see the clothes flying everywhere and the spools of thread and the toys and the. Oh, it's great. It's great. I love that time of life.
I thought it was interesting to learn how you actually became involved in writing children's books.
Well, if you're asking, then I will tell.
Tell.
Which I'd been trying to write an autobiography because Jacqueline Onassis called me up one day and said, you know, Carly, this is Jackie Onassis. I think you'd write a wonderful autobiography. And so who says no to Jackie?
Exactly.
So I started to, but couldn't get past 80 pages before I realized that I was not going to be telling this story right now in my life. This was the nucleus of it was not going to come out until many, many people later. And so I asked her at one point if it was okay to substitute, if she was still interested in my writing, if she'd be interested in hearing some of the stories that I told my children. And the first one that I wrote is called Amy the Dancing Bear. And she just loved it. And that started a series of books that I did for Jackie, being the editor at Doubleday.
Carly Simon, and you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Carly, it sounds as though it's been a straight and almost easy path, but there have been some dark times in your life. What's brought you back each time?
The faith that things are not going to stay the same, and that one way or another, whether it's from a depression or an illness or a sadness over a lost love or any number of things, things are not going to stay the same. And when things are going really, really well, it's hard for me to not think about that too, to think about the possibility of something, you know, not absolutely tender and loving and warm and cozy and fuzzy around the next corner. But things don't stay the same. And it takes a lot of faith and guts to say, well, this is life's path for me. And I'm curious enough to see what is around the next corner.
Your grandson. Actually, it was your son, Ben, who was diagnosed with dysplastic kidney.
That's right. He was born with a dysplastic kidney and had to have his kidney removed when he was two. And that to me was, you know, just about the hardest thing that I had ever borne up to under the weight of the seriousness of that illness. But we got through it, as so many people get through so many things. And he talked about, was it Susan's son on the phone from Maryland? Her son grew up to be taller than 6 feet or whatever. Ben is now 6'4", and he has one kidney, so it can be done.
Well, I want to end on a positive note. You're the first artist to win an Oscar, Golden Globe, and Grammy for a song you composed, wrote, and performed, Let the River Run. Carly Simon, I'd love to talk with you for another 2 hours and listen to your music. Thank you so much for joining us.
I couldn't be happier. Thank you for having me.
And the book is titled Take Me Out to the Ball Game, with a 3-song CD included. Carly Simon has been my guest. Thanks for listening, all. I'm Diane Rain. Asking for-